Hello, 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 world. We're back with yet another show. You heard it here first. This is the UHIH1 radio team. My name is Benito Child. I've got Bill Clark Turner with me today as my co-host and, of course, our lovely anchor woman, Alice Darrow. She'll be joining us shortly. Today, let's do some jazz. We're going to have a hear gap and it's going to be provided to us by a guy named Curtis Cleveland, who has been doing big stuff since he was an extremely young man. As I understand, part of his adventure begins with being chosen out of, I think, five thousand young people to attend, I believe, at the New York School for the Performing Arts for gifted minors, if I'm not correct. That being said, he's coming on with us this afternoon. So if you're on the East Coast, we're going to get into a jazz thing, you know. Make sure your seatbelt is buckled. Enjoy your drive time and get into some stimulating conversation. If you just tuned in, of course, you are listening to FM 107.7 on your dial. If you're listening to us on FM radio, as well as speakers.com, iHeartRadio, iHeartMedia, YouTube, iTunes, SoundCloud, and Podcast Garden. Having said that, let's kind of get into the meat and potatoes. You know, our guest for this afternoon.
We have dynamite saxophonist, straight out of New York area, straight out of Brooklyn, Mr. Curtis Haywood. Say hello to the world, Curtis.
Hello, everyone on iHeartRadio. It's a pleasure to meet this team. Thank you for having me.
That's awesome. Let me just get into some questions. Curtis, what was it like for you, obviously, to get into the high school for the performing arts as a young person? You had to put up a tremendous effort. But for our young people, we have a lot of people around the world who are musicians as well as music business aficionados who tune in with us and listen to the conversations that we have with people such as yourself. So if you don't mind, give us a glimpse of what it was like for you as a young person having to put on such a tremendous effort at that point, conclude with you beginning your actual extreme formal training after high school for the performing arts as a young person.
Well, from a very young age, the age of 6 or 7, I knew what I wanted to be. I knew music was, I didn't know at that time it was called a calling or a gift, but I sure enough knew I had something special. And you know, when you're able to tap into your gift, your calling, your purpose, quite frankly, it can become quite easy to pursue things because it came easy to me. You know, I excelled at it at school. And so by the time I got to high school, you know, I was very driven, very focused. I kind of scared my parents because my dad, who started me on the saxophone, didn't really think I was going to take it that seriously. So when I got to high school or to audition for the high school, my older brothers had to really advocate for me, for him to let me audition. It was quite ironic because he's the one who started me. And then when I got to high school, he was like, you know, you need to go to school for a trade, get a trade. You know, my dad's old school. So, and so the current kind of turned on him. And my brother says, look, you know, he's got this gift. You got to let him. And so he let me audition. I got into performing arts as well as music and art. And then, you know, it was a great, phenomenal experience. If you guys remember that, the movie Fame, I Want to Live Forever.
Yes.
Irene Cara.
Mm-hmm. That's the school that I attended for real in real life. Although I missed the filming of the movie, it was still very exciting because I came in right after the movie was, you know, a couple of years after. So it was still, you know, everybody knows that movie.
Absolutely. Tell us, you know, you had a hands-on experience there at the very same place where the script was created from, and the storyline is about life as a member of the student body there. So you were there real. What was that like in contrast to the stories that they told in the television program?
I mean, everybody who was there was 95% of the kids that were there were dead serious about what they wanted. I mean, we knew exactly what we wanted, and the competition was healthy. It was fierce, but it was healthy. And so the drive, everybody wanting to be a star, and, you know, it really was a very small family. And, you know, graduating class was only 100 kids. So it was a very small knit family, but wonderful experience.
If I can just go ahead and cut in, this is Alex Darrell.
Hi, Alex.
Again, I am also a thespian, lived in the auditorium in high school, went to college for performing arts. Like, I'm so inspired by listening to this right now. And you should have seen my face when you said you went to the school, though.
Nice. Where did you attend?
Language. You said what now?
Cool. Where did you attend?
I went to Grand Canyon University and also went to Glendale Community College. But
let them know what city,
really
nice, Alex,
compared to what you got into.
Alex, let them know the city.
Oh, I'm from Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yes, I'm
nice.
In the West Coast, so performing arts isn't too prevalent in Phoenix, Arizona. But I'm really inspired by listening to this because I can relate so much from the, you know, wanting to be a star, wanting to be center stage, to helping build the sets, to operating lights, to
mm-hmm.
all of it, being welcomed into the thespian society, paying your dues. Just things like that. This is you're speaking my language when I tell you.
Yeah, I wanted to go to school. I woke up every day just, you know, excited about going to school, you know, because the way we did it, and I think most specialized schools in terms of the performing arts might possibly follow this, where, you know, the first half of your day is the academics, and then the second half of the day is your specialty, your
right.
major. So,
but you're taking like,
you know,
6 to 7 classes just geared around one credit towards performing arts. It's crazy,
right? You know, so it was really. I mean, and we had our performances, it's just the notion that the whole entire school was there for one thing and one thing only, and that was
that's
to perform.
The difference. That's the difference,
you know,
that I didn't get to experience, because the schools that I went to, it was more like performing arts was a hobby rather than it was the main study. You know,
right,
it was more
right.
like if you're going to perform the arts in the schools I went to, it was like, okay, well, that's not really a major, so what are you actually studying? You know, I would get that a lot. So it's
right.
just like,
mm-hmm.
I'm so inspired by listening to this, but I'm going to stick around on these questions. I want to ask you this. This is what I want to know. What is the funniest experience or the most fun you've had in not only performing arts, but also in the music industry?
Wow. Well, this probably will answer one of your other questions. I'll guess that it may be. One of my funniest stories was actually when I first started out as a child. If you read my bio, when my parents, who are of West Indian descent, gave me my first instrument that was a trumpet, I wanted to take it to bed with me and cuddle up and sleep with it. And my parents, they weren't trying to hear it, and neither was I. I wasn't trying to hear it, so I kicked up a storm, and I threw a tantrum. And if any of you have West Indian parents, throwing a tantrum in West Indian parents, that's like throwing oil in a fire. And but they succumb, and they realized that I was serious, and they let me actually sleep with my trumpet. So it's funny to fast forward. Then when my dad didn't want me to audition for performing arts, you know, it wasn't until afterwards when I realized, when they finally told me the story, I was like, well, Dad, didn't you know that from age 6 or 7 when I threw the tantrum?
Right,
you should have known from there that something was not right about this kid. And so why would you stop me from auditioning if you knew from day one? Every kid wants to sleep with their instrument. So that was, you know, that was really, hearing that story.
I think that's just normal parental fear. You know, when I think about it, I don't know if you have kids, but most of us have kids. You think about it, and you have a child that's definitely gifted at something, and they stick out so much that then as the parent, you're going, well, yes, I wholly and you know, fully advocate, promote, and as a matter of fact, I demand that you perfect this gift. And then you wake up one day, and you'll just say, you know, we'll say, for instance, it's football. And you wake up one morning and you go, oh, my goodness, my kid is going to be compared to Joe Namath, O.J. Simpson, and all those other great names. What if he isn't as great as the greatest? And now all of a sudden you become a parent, you know. It's not, in other words, it's good that they're now going to be in the top 10 because they're good enough, but what if they're not good enough to be number one? You know?
Right.
We're always going to wring our hands to some extent. The thing is, your gift is exactly, you know, what the meaning is behind the word. Something to be given and not to be sheltered or kept or what's the word? Held so close to the vest that it's not shared with those who have been waiting on it. And I just want to kind of mention that, you know, in terms of what music is as a spiritual contribution to the advancement and the maintenance of mankind, just in general, in terms of what it is and why is it there's even a high school that makes it their business to look for those who have that gift and cultivate and develop and assist in contributing to the world the best we can get our hands on. It's something to do with we'll say spiritual makeup and mental health and overall welfare to a greater extent. And I won't go too far into it, but having said that, Alex, take the next question, please.
Well, I'd actually like to kind of, I'd like to piggyback off of something you just said. There are really not enough words, really, in the English language to really express the gratefulness and the thankfulness that I have and a lot of artists have for simply being bestowed upon to have this gift. It is a gift that is a divine gift. And I mean this in no way to step gift is a special, true divine connection with having the gift of the arts and entertainment, and such that the healing power and the healing nature of arts and entertainment, keeping it general, but for mind to be able to connect with people, and on any level, as they always say, music is the universal language. And when someone walks out of a concert, and for whatever that 45 minutes that they sat and listened to you, or they sat and listened to your CD, and the ability to be able to connect with someone spiritually, physically, emotionally, mentally, and take them out of whatever troubles and trials that they're going through for that time, it truly is a divine miracle that has been given to a select few. And I cannot even begin to explain how thankful I am to have that gift. Someone asked me, I was being interviewed just the other day, and they were like, well, what is it like, you know, to write music? And first thing came to mind, I says, well, if anybody has been through the process of parenting, meaning from birth, having a child, the process of having a child, writing a song, producing the song is just like having a child. All of the doctor visits you have to go, the special care, the special testing, the insight, the foresight, the foretelling, that has to go, that goes into the safety of the child being born into a world, and the protection, and even all up until, well, they can't eat this, they shouldn't be eating this, well, they should eat that. That is the type of precise architectural design that goes into writing a song.
You made me chuckle because you hit on something, and I just remembered in a very, like, an eye blink. How many meetings have I taken about, you know, what the composition of something, being a musician as well, and what it boiled down to is, we're going to have a meeting. The agenda is which notes don't go in this composition. No different than meeting with a co-parent and going, well, we need to sit down and have an argument about what we don't buy at the grocery store because we're not going to feed this kid yet.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. It's
the same amount of energy, the same level of emotion goes into it. It's a very passionate undertaking, I can tell.
I'm going through that right now with my co-producer about the CD that I'm about to release. You know, he confronted me and said, no, I don't think this song should make this CD, save it for the next CD. And I was like, mm-hmm. Excuse me? What are you talking about?
Sometimes, it's, you know, you write it and it's relevant at the time, but it'll be even more relevant at another time. And not just
right.
To you, but to the ones listening. Because me, I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm also a dancer, actress. I do things like that, too. I don't play an instrument. That's our only difference here. But I've got a lot of material that I'm like, I wanted to just go ahead and hurry up and put it out. But I'm like, dang, I don't feel like it's the right time because I don't feel like a lot of people are going to even look at it right now.
Right. And
you know?
If I may give you an abstract comparison for just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
When he said, no, this song shouldn't make it, we should, you know, pull this song from the CD. And I was like, I don't know. You don't have to justify that one. And for a moment, it took me to my middle daughter when my wife and I were expecting her, the doctors told us all kinds of madness about her, that she was going to be deformed and that she should not make it. And that was the kind of experience that I had when he told me the song shouldn't be on. It was almost like the equal to them suggesting that we should abort this child, and it shouldn't it should make it. And the same thing, I was like, excuse me? Doc, you need to justify that as to why. How dare you tell me that I'm going to abort this child because of your test and whatever test you're taking. And, you know, we shared that story with her the other day. And, you know, she wants to be a doctor. She's completely, perfectly normal, not an ounce of deformity or anything wrong. So so just a slight abstract of the feeling that comes with when your music is challenged as to whether it should be birthed or not. There's a whole nother spiritual level that I could write a thesis on in terms of music, but it is such a divine gift. And I actually feel sorry for those people who get caught up in thinking that they are the ones who write their songs. I don't care who it is. You are simply just a vessel that this creativity has been dropped into for the gifting of the world. And, you know, anybody who gets sidetracked and souped up and prideful that, you know, they're writing hit songs, my heart really goes out to them, because we are simply a vessel that has been created to bring this type of healing to the rest of the world.
Well, I just kind of want to piggyback on that, and I want to say that what you bring to mind, Mr. Curtis-Haywood, is that those of us who are old school, we truly understand the meaning of the words I'm about to say. That is simply this. My old schoolers, when I was coming up, told me, look here, son, there is being rich, there's being famous, and then there's being blessed. So what you need to understand at the beginning of the journey, if you want a career in the music business as a performer, is that those are three different words, and they don't all mean the same thing. You got to decide how much of each is who you want to be to yourself. Otherwise, you don't do the music business. The music business does you.
Absolutely.
Having said that,
I think you were pitching it to Alex.
Yes, Alex.
I'm sorry.
Please ask the question.
Yeah, he was pitching it to you before I kind of piggybacked on what he said.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I'm young. You know, I haven't even hit on the scale of what you guys have done. So I'm taking in all the advice I can. I'm doing this with an open mind and an open heart. And I'm doing it to change people's lives as well. My goal is not only to move people, but to make people laugh. Because, I mean, I'm gifted in the music way, but that's just through my feet, you know. I need music in order. Well, I don't need it because I can make music with my feet, but my passion is to make people laugh. I love to see people smile. I love to see people in good energy, and I love to spread that energy. So I take all the advice I can get. I feel like the music industry is the hardest industry. It's easy to make somebody laugh.
Well, the difficulty is simply comes down what links the difficulty between whether it's art, dance, music, drama, whatever, is whether you can eat and survive off of it. And that's really the difficulty between it. In terms of laughter and humor, you know, like I said, that type of healing is also just incredibly divine. When I found out, I don't know if you know, Alex, that it takes less than, I think maybe, I don't know, it was like 10 or 20 muscles to smile versus 100 muscles to frown. I don't know the exact numbers, but that kind of differential ratio in terms of how much stress less it is to smile than it is stressful to frown. You know, when I found that out,
that's funny you mentioned.
The science behind that is just incredible.
Mm-hmm. And I I actually piggybacked off of that fact because I like to make people smile, but I made a meme off of it because they say, you know, black people are always walking around with a frown on their face. And I said, well, if it takes more muscle to frown than it does to laugh, that's probably why blacks don't crack.
Well, that's an interesting observation coming from what I like to call Alex one of today's new schoolers. And it's refreshing to hear you say that, Alex. I look at it a little differently, but that's refreshing. Interesting.
I don't know. It's probably not true, but it's funny. That's just what people say, you know. Black people always walk around with a frown on their face, which I do. I catch myself walking around with looking at people mad, but I'm really happy inside. And if you make me smile, I'll give you the biggest smile, but I'll probably go back to frowning after I walk away.
You know, there have been plenty of comedians who have touched on the fact that black people as a collective are, for the most part, the most forgiving individuals on planet Earth. You know?
Yes, we are.
Quite frankly, you know, we bring the funk, we bring the rhythm, we bring the season tone. We are the release valve for so many people's negative stuff that it would appear that, you know, hey, if you kill one of them, they're just going to get out in the middle of the street, hug each other, hold hands, and start singing. You know, I am, we'll say, a survivor of several decades of some call it negative connotation and stereotypical media, what's the correct word? Cut and paste, if you will. Media cut and paste. I'm not necessarily militant, but I pay attention to the statistics, and I just kind of wanted to say that, you know, for the most part, it's kind of an ism that black people are mad. I found out maybe 6 months ago that for the last 10 years, more black males have graduated from a 4-year university program than have gotten out of jail. And I was impressed to hear that. I also found out by listening closely that, in other words, in stark contrast to stereotypical status quo thinking, it is not black people who are weighing down the economic mechanism of this country with welfare and being an expert at saying, I can't, I tried, and it have nothing for me, so you feed me, you take care of my kids. It's not black people that are doing that. Unfortunately, it is simple, and I had it explained to me by a mathematician who showed me the bar graph, and he says to me, if he's explaining it to me, he says to me, Ben, if you don't get this, I'll show you the pie chart, and if that doesn't get it, you know, I'll break it down into quarter notes in 16 to 30 seconds so you can really understand that there's more white people in America than there is any people. So anytime there's an economic problem, guess who's causing it? If it's about giving you free stuff and saying, I can't, and, oh, you have a job? Well, let me introduce you to my middle name. It's called FICO. That's my name on your check. So when you signed up to make $100,000 a year, you went to the, you did what everybody told you to do, you jumped through the ring of fire, you climbed the magic mountain, you changed your vocabulary, you learned all the correct words, and now you want to join mainstream society. Welcome to your first $100,000 a year job. And you get used to taking home $48,000. You want to know what happened to the rest of your money? Meet FICO. That's it. Who the hell is FICO? The person I asked is, get in the car, we go down to the bus stop. He said, if you see those guys standing there, pretending to wait on the bus as they sling whatever they're selling to the people who are stopping them, pretending to ask them, do you need a ride? I said, yeah. He goes, that's FICO. When you go to the grocery market and the guy in the Porsche with his ski racks on top of it, pays for his food with a food card, an EBT card, food stamps. And you don't have that. That would be the reason why. So, it's not that black doesn't crack. It doesn't. But black people have actually built a country, created a culture, created the relief valve, okay, and been there to everybody every step of the way. Again, I'm not militant. Just making an observation, I think that 59 years of surviving America and watching what she does to certain groups of people during certain periods of time and her social evolution, as we want to call it, that modifying here and there, well, then I would say black folks have been making a very high level of contribution to all things good, including being there when they're being mistreated. No, black doesn't crack. It has something to do with the attitude of survival and being considered a survivor instead of a victim. There's no way musicians can bring the sound that they bring without being really, shall we say, closely in touch with the heartbeat of people who are listening to what they make. Because it is, like Mr. Kurtz Hayward said, it is not necessarily the action that anybody is trying to hit that actually figured out how to be a good vessel, a good pass-through. Their vibration is being sent to those who know how to receive it. And it's coming through you, not from you. The more performing entertainers who understand this, the less egotistical horseshit we're going to have in the business. And the more, we just say, there'll be a higher quality of what music is supposed to do for and to the human listener. And having said that, I'll digress. And you get back to your question, Gala.
Okay, because that was really powerful, and I really love what you have said about black people and everything, but you get my joke.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. You mind if I ask a question?
Of course.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, I want to know, since you went to the School of Performing Arts, who was in your graduating class that graduated that really did something that was significant to the industry? Was there anybody in particular?
I did go to school with Irene Cara. When she did Flashdance.
Wow.
So yeah, she was there. She was there we were there together, and do y'all watch?
So Curtis, you have to tell us your Irene Cara story. You went to school. You have to tell the listeners your Irene Cara story. What's it like to be around her? I mean, we all fell in love with who she was on screen. And on stage, but what is it like to be in the same room with her where you're sharing that energy that everybody's got so hooked on?
No, she was, they wrote that part for her. She truly was the same type of individual, very open, very free-spirited, very down-to-earth, very approachable. So what you saw on the screen was actually what you got in real life. She was definitely, you know, she did not have an attitude in any way, form, or fashion, or, you know, exude, you know, pride. She was really, really down to earth. Let me see. Do you guys, have you watched or have you seen what's her name?
Union?
In Being Mary Jane? Yeah, Gabrielle Union. Yes. Do you know the character that plays her producer, that the Spanish girl that's always with her.
Yes, the gorgeous sister, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's his favorite character.
No, she was there as well. She and Irene Cara were they were a year ahead of me. Possibly two, but we were there at the same time. There were plenty of people, because one thing, my wife, when I was dating her, even, you know, since we've been married, you know, whenever I'm watching a movie or a see something, I'm like, oh yeah, I went to school with her. And then you would just kind of hear crickets, because she really didn't care.
Man, but I would have been blown away to be in the same room with Irene Cara. I remember her from Sparkle when I was a little kid, and I was like, my favorite movie. I'm like, wow, she's cool. She can really sing.
Actually, her name, not the I went to school with Vanessa Williams, not the Miss America Vanessa Williams.
The Vanessa Williams from Soul Food, the TV show.
From Soul Food. Yeah. I went to school with her as well. So I believe she, Irene, and the other lady from Being Mayor Jane, they were all in the same class, because I remember being right behind them, either a year, no more than two, right behind them. I was blessed. I was blessed to rub elbows with quite a few people, you know, that definitely were blessed to make it, so to speak, to the level of popularity.
That's a blessed situation. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say that.
That's awesome. Tell us, Curtis, when you were coming up, okay, as a young musician, who were your primary influences as far as other musicians that you were into that had a profound impact on your current styling?
Yeah, it's funny, because we just talked about that, Bill and I, right before we started. Grover Washington and David Sanborn were my, you know, strongest influences. There was one before them, my namesake, King Curtis. You may know him from Soul Serenade and back in the 60s. Who really, really, truly shaped my sound was Grover Washington. And then David Sanborn. So those were the records that I warped, and those were the vinyl records that I just kept spinning and kept spinning.
what was it like working with Kirk Franklin? That's what I really wanted to know, because growing up, me and my sisters, we had a dance group. And a lot of our songs were by Kirk Franklin. So, please.
Kirk, he is definitely, what you see on stage is definitely Kirk. He's very comical, very cool. And he definitely walks in the spirit of James Cleveland from, you know, back in the gospel days of gospel, in terms of his style. He's, you know, a modern day James Cleveland, the talk singers, the, you know, and the motivator. So very entertaining, very approachable.
And he really talks like he's preaching all the time.
No, when you talk to him, you know, he's got that raspy voice. But watching him transform and getting on stage, that's
you know how you have people that always talk, they always rhyme when they talk, and it's like, why is he talking to me in a poem? Is that how he talks?
No, he's you know, he's regular, but when he transforms on stage, which I can attest to, the transformation when you get on stage is also divine. It is amazing how when you get on stage, you just the divine inspiration just carries you through, and you just transform right there.
I know it just moves you, because I haven't ever been to any of his concerts, but just listening to his music, it's really hard to just stand there and listen to it. Like, you can't. It's impossible.
You want to get up and dance, you think.
Right. I mean, and he tells you to, too. So it's hard to just stand there and ignore him.
Yeah, when I'm on stage, I interact with a crowd. Sometimes I often feel that I should have minored in theater, because I get real comical. I like to tell jokes on stage. And sometimes people look at me look at me funny, like, you know, I'm supposed to be this, you know, intellect on stage. I get down on stage. I get really, I don't like those stages that you can't come off of. I like to get down and get in the audience and really connect with people.
Right. When I was dancing when I was younger, that I really can tell, you know, if, you know, I skip a step on stage, or if, you know, my movement wasn't really moving the crowd. As long as I got out there and danced with the crowd, they didn't care about what I did before that.
Right. So true. So true.
For real, they're like, oh, she cares.
No, yeah, absolutely right.
So for starving artists, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I had a question. A research is telling me that you work with the Harold Melvin and the Midnight.
Oh, yeah. There was a couple years where I was opening for them. I was working with this promoter that did that whole circuit of old school R&B, the Stylistics, Delphonics, Blue Magic. You know, I've even, you know, backed the Temptations, and I did both Temptations. The Temptations with Dennis Edwards, got his name. I did the Dennis Edwards with the Temptations in Review, but Otis Williams. So I've actually played with both of them and open for them. So that has really truly been a treat. So
I did want to just stop for a second and say that our hearts and our prayers go out to the Edwards family, as you all probably are aware of. Edwards passed away a couple of days ago. One of the last Temptations, as I understand it, that's the last lead singer. Will, according to your count, are there any original members of the Temptations at this point?
The only one that's still living is Otis Williams and the guy Ron Tyson, who was a writer for the Delphonic Stylistics. He's the longest living member to ever be the Temptations. He came in the group in 1983, and he's still there to present day. But he's the longest living.
Well, I want our listeners to know that I'm asking you right now, before anything else happens, God forbid, I want you to get them both lined up to come on to our show. And, of course, you have everybody listening. If you just tuned in, I'm Benito Kyle. This is Will Clark Turner. We've been interviewing with Curtis Hayward, excellent horn player, and of course, As usual, we got the lovely Alex Darrow with us as our co-host.
I was about to say, I guess I got to sit out on grown folks business then.
Ben, let me chime in one minute.
You have the big people table. You're supposed to be here. Go ahead, Bill.
Let me chime in. If you listen to the show, Otis and Rod Tyson, Phil People, any members of the former Temptations or Temptations Today, hit us up. We'd be glad to have you on the show. From your boy, the Fly Jock, Bill Turner. Thank you.
That being said, if you just tuned in, you are listening to FM 107.7 if you're rolling around in the car, unless you got us on iTunes, iHeart Radio, SoundCloud, Podbean, Guardians of Podcast Guardians, and many others. Again, this is You Heard It Here First, and we are USIS 19 with Alex Darrow, myself, Benito Child, and Will Clark Turner. Our guest for today's drive time is Curtis Haywood. Will, you know, I really want to have a hear gather. Excuse me.
What was that, please, or were you just attacked by something?
It has wings. You know, it's batting me in the head, you know. Much means this death has been drowning me. We have different bugs out here. I saw something that looked like a cockroach, but cockroaches don't have wings where I'm from. I understand.
Wait, time out. So you were attacked by a cockroach?
Well, you know, I don't want to call it that. I do remember being down in Florida with the lights off. I went to the bathroom, and I reached up for the light switch. And the lights just climbed down my arm. So, you know, I like the people in Florida. From time to time.
Wait, back up. So, did you ever get the light switch out of your arm?
Yes. The visual on that was really something. You know, what did we do? You know, kill the light switch, literally.
Kill the light switch.
Or finish using the bathroom.
Wait, time out. We're talking about it. I know you guys don't really like this kind of winning.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Alex, to the world.
Yes, sorry.
Give me here. What happened?
Sorry, I forgot we're on air.
Oh, one in a moment.
Wait. So if you use your own 20-second delay. Alex has two personalities. The other one is keeping her from cussing on the air.
Did I really?
Yep, we didn't hear a word. Somehow you bleepity bleep.
No. I'm having fun.
Oh, I'm like, I don't remember saying a cuss word. Like, I didn't say anything that needed to. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, dude, that was God. I'm going to move on.
You know what, Will? Because everybody's driving home from work, I just wanted to say, you know, I hope that you guys feel the same with everybody. The same way that I do about the compositions and the musical stylings of Curtis Haywood. I really like what I heard, and Will, I think that everybody should be listening to some on their way home. Of course, if you're driving, be careful, but listen to it.
So, Ben, so what do you want to do? So you want to have a hair gather?
Of course, absolutely. Let's all get a hair gathering together. We need a worldwide hair gathering.
Well, Ben, I'm gonna have to let you know. I'm gonna have to stop the recording device to keep this so we can come back on. I'm gonna have to merge it in.
Well, all I want you to do is merge it in right here. Now I want you to act like we just came back from it, so Alex pick it up, station ID, plug everybody. And, you know, it will have been, what was the name of the song that you were just talking about by Fields and Croft? Is that Summer Breeze?
It's a snippet of Summer Breeze, and the album's coming out in May. It's like
less than 2 minutes. That's fine. Then we want to come in off of that, intro and plug the song, plug the project, bring the guests right in, and
I don't know if I have the thing to cut this, just to let y'all know.
Hmm.
I don't know if I can cut this, over the back part, because it's still recording right now, just to let everybody know.
If you don't, so that means everybody gets to have a behind-the-scenes look at what we do as the UHIS 1 team.
Yes.
But I don't know if any other radio broadcast teams allow their listeners to hear what's going on in the background. But, yes, ladies and gentlemen, everybody around the world, and we are talking about 500 cities in America, 156 countries around the world. There is a curtain. There's a curtain, and we work behind it. And we just let you hear what we do behind the curtain. We are indeed pre-taping this broadcast. And what we were talking about is, well, that's the spot where you need to hear the wonderful music of our guest, Curtis Kingwood. Having said that, Alex, you'll take the next question, please.
Okay. Curtis, how you doing?
Doing good.
That's good. Well, you know what? Let me ask you this. As a starting artist, you know, barely coming out, building my scene, building my platform, what is the most important thing you've learned in the industry thus far that can help me out?
Well, I've kind of, I used to kind of pitch it one way, but then I kind of, twisted it. You have to know what type of individual you are. I'll kind of try to summarize it. These are the two kind of main types of personalities that are out there. You have the type of person who's the free-spirited person who really may not put a lot of planning and foresight. They kind of really just live, not necessarily from day to day, but they don't really concern themselves with a lot of the responsibilities that come in life, and they really have just this natural divine faith of just stepping out and not worrying about whether or where they're going to eat, where they're going to live sometimes. I'll give it to that in that the extreme. Then the other type of person needs kind of some security of knowing where their money is, where their bread's coming from, where they're going to eat. And they may not necessarily have that natural jumping ability to be able to jump out on ideas and take some blind faith. They kind of really are very reserved, and they kind of need to plan and see. So even though there are different other types of personalities, those kind of usually are the general personalities that people come in. With that said, knowing the type of person, and if I may put it out there, there's a book called The Way They Learn, and the author's name is Cynthia Tobias. Wonderful book, short read, powerful read. And she gives kind of like four basic personalities, the two main ones that I just described, the abstract random person who can, you know, again, that's the free-spirited person. And then you have the concrete sequential person who is very concrete, needs to know details, needs to know, you know, real basic, who really is into counting the costs before they jump into endeavors, into dreams and businesses. And if you see where I'm going with this, if you can identify the type of person that you are, then you can come up with a strategy of venturing out, especially into the entertainment industry, because that is the true essence of what it comes down to, How are you going to eat? How are you going to sleep, eat, and drink in this jungle? Because they were not kidding when they called the entertainment industry a jungle. There is just simply no rhyme or reason to how the industry operates. So whenever I talk to young people, I try to help them first tune in on how, what type of person they are. And even parents with kids who are going to college and school, you got to know what kind of individual they are. So then sometimes if you get the abstract free-spirited person, which, you know, you always hear that stereotypical, the starving musician, you know, the person who, you know, would starve and just for the sake of doing all they want to do is just their craft. Then you can kind of really say, oh, if that's the type of person you are, then you know what? They can jump full speed ahead into the industry and really can take a lot of the bumps and scratches that come with it versus the type of person who was very reserved, the concrete sequential. A lot of those people are not built, I use the term lightly, for the bumps and scratches that come with the industry. So you really, truly have to know the type of person you are. Because one question I've always sat and chuckled and laughed and have yet to hear any superstar or star or whatever give a concrete answer, because really there is no concrete answer. And that's when they ask them, so what do you say to up and coming artists, or what, you know? And you always see them say, you know, don't give up, you know, work hard and stay committed. And okay, yeah, we know that. If you've got the gift, you know that's even if you don't have a good work ethic, you know, hard work is what it takes. Mm-hmm. They never, ever, ever give a concrete or any kind of strategy, because quite frankly, there is no strategy in the entertainment industry. It's a hella high come water, you know, hella come high water. You know, I've come up with one or two strategies based on my experience. You know, the other side of Curtis, the musician, is, you know, I've been a mental health counselor for quite a number of years. And I came this close to becoming a nurse, a male nurse, a black male nurse. I would have been a commodity. I would have been able to make a lot of money. So my strategy was going to be become a nurse, become then do travel nursing through agencies that would have paid for myself to get over to the West Coast. And becoming a nurse, I'd be able to work 3 days out of the week, do 3 12-hour shifts or 3 16-hour shifts, whatever would make 40 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have the rest of the week to do my music and to navigate the industry. But what did that all come down to? How was I going to eat? It had nothing to do with the industry. It had everything to do with how are you going to eat and survive that is completely non-entertainment related. Because when your bread and butter is dependent on the industry, that's where the selling of your soul and the compromise and the sad stories of you people, you know, doing whatever it takes to get to the top is because they've completely relied on the entertainment industry to feed them. But if you can come up with a way, my secondary gift is the gift of insight and communication. And I believe we all have not just one gift. We have several gifts.
Multiple.
So, multiple gifts. And I believe the reason for that is that they all can support and work with each other. I don't believe God would give you multiple gifts and then leave you stranded, saying, "Oh gosh, mm-hmm. which one should I?"
Right,
and they all contradict each other. That would go against the chemistry. Yeah. So mm-hmm. you know, so finding your gifts, first, second, and tertiary, and seeing how they can support and build each other, especially if you dare step foot on the playing field of the entertainment. And that's really the parent's job. That really comes back to the parent's job of helping your child navigate their giftings. I'm so glad. Oh, man, I'm so glad that I tapped into mine so early in life so I could take advantage of the specialized high school and then take advantage of going to college. My heart goes out for those who straight even go through college and almost kind of waste going through college because they haven't been able to tap in to their giftings and callings. I don't know if that answered your question at all.
It really did, but, actually. What I'm going through in real life.
And it leads to another question because as we understand it, you come from or are part of a very unique and small, prestigious alumni of the Berklee College of Music. Is that correct? At Berklee School of Music in Boston, right?
Yeah, I went to Berklee after performing arts, and I use this term lightly because it is. I am who I am, but I found out that whole scenario that I gave you much later in life, that I was the concrete sequential type of person. So quite frankly, I did not take some of the leaps and bounds in life throughout life because I was raised, remember, I had West Indian parents. So it was burnt in my brain. You get a job, you pay your rent, and then you eat. And in that order, you make sure your bills are paid, and then you talk about eating. If you got to clean toilets, you clean toilets. So the responsibility of life was burnt into my brain early in life. So, you know, I've had opportunities to tour, and I didn't take them because my brain was saying, what happens after the 6 months? What happens after the 9 months? What happens after the 1 year? But that abstract random person, their brains are wired in such a way that whether it's 6 months, 3 months, 9 months, a year, it doesn't bother them. It does not concern them. How am I going to live and eat after that? I could even make this into a bigger thing in terms of the slave mentality of Black folk. But we're going to leave that alone because, you know, that has a lot to do with why a lot of Black folk haven't jumped into the sea.
You know,
just simply,
I'm beseeching you, I beg you even, please go there. Now, the reason that I'm asking you to is because, well, there are quite a few high-level, seasoned, veteran, world-class players who have been afflicted with various diseases who are not going to be with us very long, okay? I won't go into specific names, but what I'm saying is for far too long, members of the music industry elite have been passing away, and their families have been very hungry and quietly passing a half, and it's pretty good. It's been a whole bunch of it. Don't tell anybody. There never was any real money. We spent it all on the outfits and the shiny cars. We never had no house. There was no savings. We need $15,000 to put them in the ground and another couple of grand and get a jewelry out the pawn shop so we could put them in the ground looking like who he's been his whole life. And none of it's real. And we talked about that on this show. As a matter of fact, we were talking with a brother out of New York, Paul Brown, who is actually one of our New York affiliates for broadcast. And he was telling us about what was going on with certain members of the music industry, and it turned into a thing where Herbie Hancock and several other notables and quotables, believe Mark Miller,
Victor Woolsey,
Stanley Clark, yeah, all kind of called in and said, well, hey, if you guys are going to give a fundraiser, okay, to help out some of these others who have had a long, arduous journey, and they have made a tremendous contribution, not only to the music industry, but to the world at large, who are going down in flames, and we need to do something for them. Now, what that turned into is, how come? Where does this come from? Why is it that so many black entertainers die, and the truth comes out that they don't have a red tent? And we're not going to say that everybody has a record label steal from them. That's BS. We know better than that. This has probably got something to do with the plight of those people on a mental level, okay? And we'll just call it skin demon. And I do want you to go there because, you know, there are those of us who watch and we listen and we purchase music, and we download, and we go on YouTube, and we get on the computer, and, you know, okay, we get something from that. But you're right there, shoulder to shoulder, with the people who make it happen live. No button pushers, the real thing. That is a precious commodity in today's overly technical, modernized, computerized world. To even be talking to somebody who can pick up a horn, blow air into it, press the keys, and do something for me that nobody else can. I want to highlight that, but I do want you to come from the perspective of what's going on in everybody's brains. What are the habitual, repetitive habits that are negative that are actually going to kill the various genres of music that require real live players, not buttons, keyboards, and computers? Mr. Kevin Hayward, your thoughts about my thoughts, sir?
Well, the slave mentality really does sum it up, because when you are a slave, every bit of the slavery that we experience is so ingrained in us as a culture, it has completely just detonated and killed those two types of personalities into one, basically, that, you know, when you're an abstract random, I mean, when you're a concrete sequential, it's a healthy fear, really, and a fear of the unknown that keeps you from jumping into the abyss of entrepreneurship, entertainment industry, yada, yada, yada. So when a whole race of people have been beat into that fear of jumping into the abyss, then you have the few select that are able to fight through and realize that I'm an abstract random person, and it's going to take that type of personality to be an entrepreneur, because it really does. You really truly have to have a partnership between an abstract random and a concrete sequential to really jump out, because those two types of personalities really also need to recognize the strength. And you'll realize this if you read the book, The Way They Learn. You know, she gave a scenario that, you know, an abstract random person will come up with this blazing, brilliant idea, but won't have their plan to execute it. And that's where the concrete sequential person will say, okay, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And we'll take some of the air out of the, you know, the plan, but we'll then fine tune it and come up with a plan of action. You know, so again, you know, blacks as a whole have been stripped, know nothing, you know, so many years knew nothing about that type of partnership that was needed. Hence, the increasing of the crab getting out the bucket mentality, you know, the few that fought and decided to really pursue past the fear. I want to kind of just really, it seemed like Alex was saying that that did kind of, I don't know if I did answer your question, because I forgot what your initial question was.
Well, you were touching on the slave mentality. You know, some of us from my genre, we've watched over the years, and you know the whole story of what happened to entire musical organizations that somehow brought joy, wealth, and prosperity to everybody around them. And because they were the non-sequential type of individuals, they died penniless. But then this goes all the way back in history. You take the two artists, I believe it was Red Black and the other one. One died, I forget his name, but many people know the story. One died wealthy, one died penniless, both equally famous, both equally talented and skilled, most would say. So it still boils down to a personal choice. My question to you, as a veteran player, with as many years of history and your accomplishments, do you feel that the same rule of thumb applies in today's world, given the modern technology, given the way that the administrative mechanisms work in the music industry today? What do you really suggest? I mean, you do have those who are absolute true gypsy vagabonds, and somehow, we call it the Tarzan gear. Meaning, they have a vibe, you're swinging, you're beating your chest, you're being enthusiastic, the adrenaline is pumping, they are doing their thing, they are having the adventure across their life, and as soon as they see the next vibe, why they let go of the one that they're hanging on to. And usually this works for them. If you are not one of these kind of people, you try and repeat the process or assimilate the process, you got your vine, you're swinging from tree to tree, and the next thing you know, there's no vine for you. You hit the tree and slide down. Now, given that, and this is only my observation, what's your opinion about what's out there, what level of focus, and what's different for today's young people with the same dream that you have achieved in their beginning this adventure? What can you tell us?
Well, you know, the internet, as we all know, has, you know, leveled the playing field. It is a double-edged sword because the beautiful free advertising. Hello?
We got you.
I'm still here.
Who'd you lose?
I'm still here.
I'm still here, too. I think we lost Mr. Curtis to the world.
But while we try to get him back, let's remind our listeners that they're listening to 107.7 FM radio on UPRN Music Talk, also on iTunes, iHeart, YouTube, SoundCloud, and many others. Here with one of your hosts, Alex Darrow, my co-host Benito Childs, and my other co-host, Will Clark Turner. Thank you all for listening, and we will get our guest, Curtis Haywood, back on the line.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will.
We do want you to remember that you are listening to the UHIH1 TV and radio team.
Yes, you are.
That's after you heard it here first.
Give me a second while I make my magic and bring all the brothers back together. Hold on.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
So while Will is doing that, Ben, I need to.
Yeah. We're still here in the place.
Hi, it's Curtis Haywood of Smooth Sounds Entertainment.
I'm just keep on moving on.
Well, I'm just going to let y'all know this. We're still back on the air. I'm not able to get Curtis. She should be calling us back soon. But I think we had a great conversation with Mr. Curtis Haywood. He's an awesome artist.
I think we did too. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Of course, if you're driving home from work, be careful, pay attention, but enjoy the music, because that's what we came on the air to talk about is Music Talk Radio. I'm Benito Child. Of course, we've got Alex Carroll with us and Will Clark Turner. You're listening to the USIH1 team. Having said that, Will, I'm sure you're going to get us out of here with another couple of eargasm.
Well, I'm going to tell y'all this. William, myself, you know, the fly jack. I've been calling myself the fly jack for the last couple of episodes. We're going to get into some songs. We're going to play a snippet.
You didn't say you was calling yourself that.
Oh, yes, I am. Oh, yeah. That's
why didn't you tell us to call you that? We could have been the ones calling.
It's all good, but I'm going to let folks know. Coming in May, Curtis Haywood has a new album coming out, and we're going to break into a single off his previous album. Well, we're going to play a snippet from his upcoming album. It's a remake of the Stills and Croft classic, Summer Breeze. So you're going to hear that, and you're going to hear some other great songs from his previous albums. Go out and support his albums on iTunes and every social media site. His music is sold. Go to Amazon, buy the albums, because you're going to love it. We're about to hear Heargasm. And y'all have a wonderful night, and we'll see y'all in the next episode of You Heard It Here First. Y'all want to say something, Ben? Alex?
Thank y'all
listening. I want to thank everybody for listening. Of course, I want to give a special shout out to our friends on the East Coast, our friends in the Midwest, our friends down south, and of course, our friends on the West Coast. Everybody, have a wonderful evening. Drive safe. And if you're already home, get a good night's rest. And we'll see you next Monday, same time, same station.
Hold up, Ben. We got a little special caller coming in right now from all the way from New York City. We're going to bring back our brother for a quick second, Mr. Curtis Haywood. Hold on while I make that happen. We're about to make some magic happen. Yeah. We're back with Curtis. Just to let y'all know, we're back with Curtis for a few seconds before we close out the show.
Wonderful. Curtis, we were trying to remember all the wonderful things to say about you. Of course, before we get off the air, and thank you for getting back to us, is there anybody that you want to give shout-outs to, one, and two, where can we get Curtis Haywood if we want some for our very selves? What's your point of sale, and when is your next performance so everybody can come out and see what you're doing and hear and experience your composition?
Well, the CD is titled Summer Breeze, and it is set for release May 4th. And my website is my name, CurtisHaywood.com. Curtis Haywood is also on Facebook, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm on Facebook a lot more than the others. It's actually my second page. Curtis Haywood number 2 is the one page that is open and still accepting friends. And social media is definitely the best way to stay in contact. You can get on my mailing list if you go to my website, CurtisHaywood.com, and join the mailing list. From there, you can hear samples from previous CDs.
Any live performances planned for this month?
No, I'm really focusing more on CD release performances. Those are dates that are currently in the works.
Well, all our listeners just want to say, I'm excited about hearing the new compositions of Curtis Haywood. And unfortunately, there will be no live performance this month, as he is concentrating, as he said, on releasing the CD. So we're all just going to have to hold our breath and wait. I think it's worth it. I'm going to hold my breath. How soon can I get the next composition?
Well, the CD, like I said, May 4th is when it's being released. It will be, as the previous two are available on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora. So please, if you use those avenues, please just, you know, type in my name. I'm thankful for those who do understand the value of music, who even pay for subscriptions. That's a whole nother story, especially with Black folk who unfortunately don't like to support our own music. We could save that for a whole nother talk show. But please, my dad always taught me, spend the money in your community. At least you know where your money is being spent. And the spending power that we have as a people is just insurmountably ridiculous, especially we've seen it come through with Black Panther. So don't just enjoy the music and go get it on YouTube. Invest. It's only a dollar, maybe 10 for the whole CD, but it's money well spent. Know this also, that I do partner with several organizations in terms of charity, one being Feed the Children, which is a global organization. Second is Community to Community, which is in Haiti. And then Self-Help, which is also, which is in Africa. And so when you do purchase a CD, I do take portions of CD revenue and partner with these organizations. I have a heart for Africa. Off my first CD is a song called Rain Song. And that was a personal prayer for rain for the country of Ethiopia. And to my friends and fans and family, Rain Song was a prayer for you if your life reached any type of drought or lack thereof. You know, my prayer for you is that that rain in whatever area would come and just bring new life and renovation into your life in that area. So support our product, and I look forward to coming back with you guys when the CD is released, and then we can do some listening of it.
I think Alex, Ben, I think we need to do a panel discussion, and we need to bring this brother back. I think that would be great.
I was about to say, so if we do a CD release party, we can get a live performance.
Yeah. You know, I like that idea.
You need to come out to
film. Oh, yeah.
He did most say. Definitely.
You know what? We should talk about that. We really should. As a matter of fact, Will, if you don't mind, schedule us to be in a conversation about that.
Well, I'm going to let the world know. Be looking for, we said it right here. You heard it here first. FM 107.7 on your dial. Be looking out for the album release party in a city near you. Good night and have a blessed night.
Thank you
for joining us, Curtis, and thank you everyone for listening to You Heard It Here First on 107.7 UPRN Music Talk Radio. That's on FM Radio, also on iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, SoundCloud,
Spreaker.com too. Spreaker.com.
And Spreaker.com. See, we need to just follow that up with, and so many more that we can't remember, but then maybe they'll be mad at us for not even doing it.
Right.
It's like a list of 25, so that's a lot.
We can put on to listen to us.
Let's do it the other way around. If there is a platform that does not carry our program,
let us know. Email us.
Because we will be there.
Because we will be there. We need to be there. We want to be there. Alex Darrell, I want to thank you for coming on.
We'll camp out like viral star Jarvis Johnson outside of Best Buy.
And of course, big ups to Curtis Haywood for coming on the air with us and blessing us with his latest composition and telling us the, of his experiences and giving us some wisdom and knowledge and understanding. That's so cool. And that's what we like to do. Here on You Heard It Here First. Again, everybody have a safe drive, and we'll be back to you next Monday.
Yep, peace and blessings.
Peace.